So last week we finished Leviticus, which is great. We're moving along. We're now in the fourth book of the Pentateuch. And the Pentateuch, that word penta, five, right? The first five books of the Bible written by Moses. And we're going to keep going. So Numbers in Greek is, that's a Greek name in the Septuagint, is arithmoi, which numbers, think of that word arithmetic. In Hebrew, actually apparently the name is Bemidbar, and that means in the wilderness. And an appropriate title, for indeed, this is going to be Israel in the wilderness. So if you recall, Israel in Exodus, we see that Israel is, they're in captivity in Egypt, and then the Lord delivers them by the hand of Moses and leads them out to Mount Sinai. And then this book is going to take place for, this is basically from them leaving Egypt in Sinai, and then this covers the next 40 years, because Deuteronomy, the next book that we're going to be going to, Deuteronomy starts about like 40 years later. So, first 40 years of Israel's history in the desert post-Egypt, and what we are going to see is the expectation here. Well, actually, I'll get to that in a minute, but this book, just to give you a little bit of an overview, I'm really excited to delve into this. One of the things about it is like, man, there's just so much, there's so many different points we're going to be hitting and so much content. We're going to see just like powerful pointers to Christ in the wilderness. We're going to see the Israelites like spying out the land, the promised land. The Lord said that he was going to lead them in. If you recall that language, he said he's going to take them to a land of milk and honey, a good and broad land. So we'll see the Israelites spying out that land and Israel actually getting like being scared of its inhabitants, rebelling against the Lord and Moses multiple times. We're going to see a blossoming staff. There's this incredible sequence in which there's a pagan prophet, Balaam, who is hired to prophesy Israel's destruction. He ends up rightly prophesying that God is going to bless this nation. We'll see Moses' own moral failure and the consequence of that. And you know, one of the things I love so much about this book, Numbers, and the Bible in general, is that you can pull up a map and see these places. It's not like a bunch of mythical kingdoms. This is like real history and a real place. It's not a tale set in fantasy land that's like, hey, nobody has ever heard of these places or anything like that. No, this is our real history, the real history of the earth. And something striking that we're going to see in this book, which is exciting for us to delve into, is that the Bible, the biblical worldview, challenges and brings up and challenges many of our presuppositions. So there are things in here which we view as like factual and data-driven that we're like, oh, of course, like, this is what you would expect in history, like the census numbers. There's two censuses which are going to be taken, two big ones, at these two different points. And they're set side by side within the same narrative with things that we would classify as like miraculous and unusual, right? And they are miraculous and unusual, but like Balaam's donkey, its mouth being loosed and actually speaking, the ground swallowing up, rebellious Israelites being led by a pillar of cloud and fire. And what the biblical narrative gives us is all these different stories that are all presented before us as fact, as history, and uncowed to kind of all the presuppositions that oftentimes we import in reading texts like this. Because we can think, oh, no, like a modern, say, skeptical mindset goes like, oh, no, the census data should be in, that's categorized as history, and the things that seem miraculous or I don't understand how they happened or the numbers in here that I don't like or I don't think they align, I'm going to put those in a different category. That'll be mythical history or what, you know, whatever kind of like national myths. But no, the Bible actually presents these as this is all factual, this happened. So I think that's something that it's going to be challenging as we go into it. And I'm excited to delve into it. One of the big recurring themes, obviously if you're kind of at all familiar with this, is going to be Israel's sin again and again and God's displeasure, and also his mercy. You know, all of God's self-revelation in the Bible is grace. Numbers is full of grace. You know, there's this kind of idea out there that the Old Testament, God is not gracious, and all of a sudden the New Testament, he is gracious. But rather, God's grace is throughout the Bible. Whenever God is revealing himself to people, that's grace, because he doesn't have to. He could just unleash judgment rightly upon us, or he could just be like, I don't care, I'm not going to deal with you at all. But rather, God is continually drawing near to his people, and even his judgment, his discipline, saying, no, do not do this. This is what you must do. This is the way to life. That is his grace. And remember, in all of this, and I think this is a great just a great reminder again and again when you're reading the Bible that if there's something you don't understand or there's a passage you're like, oh, this doesn't resonate with me or what do I think about this? Remember, God's character does not change. The God you are going to encounter in the Old Testament is the same God as in the New Testament. God is love, as Josh was talking about today. In 1 John 4, we're told twice that God is love. That is who he is. And that loving character is not something that was a sudden change. He has always been that. He has always been that. And he is that here. So remember that as you're parsing through, if there's things you don't understand, just keep going back to that, the reliability of his character. And there's a beauty to both humility, approaching the text with humility, especially if there's things we don't understand or which don't seem to resonate or whatever, or if there's a bunch of skeptical historians who would combat it or contradict it. Just remember, like, this is God's self-revelation and approaching it with a sense of humility. And also, like, questions are great. Questions are a way to dig deeper into the text and to dig deeper into who God is. And I want to remind you, before I forget, always afterwards, feel free, whether it's me or Ian or whomever is teaching, you feel free to ask us questions after. We're totally here. We used to have Q&A as part of the kind of talk times here, and we switched that up, but we are still fully available for questions. So another thing, as we kind of keep going, I think is really good to remember to be aware of, and I want to read this before we delve right in, is that Paul, in the letter to the Corinthians, actually first letter to the Corinthians, tells us specifically about this portion of narrative of the Israelites, how it's actually here, part of its reason for being here is to give us insight into ourselves, into our own lives. And I'm going to read this here, this kind of whole passage. This is 1 Corinthians 10. For I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them God was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. You hear that? It took place as examples for us. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and rose up and drank and rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. So he points us to this passage of narrative of the Israelites and said, this is actually here for our instruction. And then he actually applies it to our own lives, like that when we're tempted, when we feel like a pull towards idolatry. So, you know, sometimes when we're reading it, when you see Israel doubting or rebelling, you can think, I mean, the whole time they're being led by a cloud of pillar and fire, and the Lord's presence is like literally visible. And you can look at them and think, how could you? It is so obvious God is with you. How could you doubt? But then we forget that we often do the same thing. So, we're about to dive in. There's one last point I want you to recall is Israel has been taken out of Egypt and they're on their way to the promised land immediately. You know, if you're familiar with the narrative, you know they're going to be wandering for 40 years, but they don't know that, right? They think they're going to actually be there very soon, very soon. Apparently, I mean, it's not a 40-year journey from Egypt to the promised land. I've heard of some different numbers, but 11 days is one of them. So, I mean, it is a shockingly brief journey compared to what is actually going to happen. And we'll see as we go through why that happened. So, numbers one. The Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first day of the second month in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, take a census of all the congregation of the people of Israel by clans, by fathers' houses, according to the number of names, every male, head by head. From 20 years old and upward, all in Israel who are able to go to war, you and Aaron shall list them, company by company. I'm going to pause right there. And this is happening in the tent of meeting. Remember that tabernacle? The tabernacle that they set up that is elaborately detailed in Exodus? And we're told more about it in Leviticus. So this is God meeting with Moses there. And with that, I just want you to picture, I remember I brought up, I drew up a little graphic once, but this tabernacle is in the middle of the Hebrews camp, in the middle of the Israelite camp. There's this tabernacle, and within it, there's an altar, there's various things that are used in the Israelites, their religious ceremonies, but within it, there is the Holy of Holies, the most holy place, in which Aaron is going to go just once a year on the Day of Atonement. So this is a place of holiness where God's presence is. I remember there is a great sense of, like, with holiness, like, you don't want to just, like, you cannot, not just anybody can go in there. And also there's a shedding of blood, there's sacrifices for sins. There's just this sense of, like, this is God's, if you think of it, this is like entering the king's throne room on earth, and this is the holy king. So remember that, God's holiness and the penalty. I mean, like, if you rush in on that, if you were to, like, transgress that holiness, the penalties are severe. The penalties are death, right? There's, like, a great intensity to it, but it's a right intensity, a righteous intensity. So remember, God is in the midst of things, so Moses is meeting with him. And here, this census is specifically, we're told specifically what, like, the reasoning of this is, we're looking for all in Israel who are able to go to war, because they are going to go, God is going to lead them to conquer the nations of the land they're about to enter in. We're told at one point that God was waiting, I believe he said this to Abram, is that there was, like, going to be almost like a filling up of the sins that the inhabitants, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, and others, were, the inhabitants of the lands were doing, the sins they were doing. There was, like, a time, they had an allotted time, and they had been in sins of extreme rebellion against the Lord, and time's up, and God was going to give this land to his people. They were going to go in and conquer, but as we'll see, the people, God's people, had sin within them as well. All right, verse 5. And these are the names of the men who shall assist you. From Reuben, Elizur, the son of Shedeur. From Simeon, Shelumiel, the son of Zerushaddai. From Judah, Nashon, the son of Aminadab. From Issachar, Nathaniel, the son of Zuar. And quickly, verse 7, it talks about, verse 7. Judah and Nashon, the son of Aminadab, just a side point, and this is always interesting when you're reading the Bible, you come across these. Like, this is somebody who is actually in the line of Boaz. If you recall the book of Ruth, he's going to marry Ruth, and eventually that's going to lead to Jesus. So it's an incredible thing where you just have these, like, little, these moments that are almost like, if you think of them as cross-referenced and, like, these kind of footnotes in history, and, like, oh, actually this is going to lead to Jesus, to the Redeemer, to the one who's going to solve the big problem of sin, which I think is the question that is underlying so much of the text, right? So we'll keep going. From Issachar, Nathaniel, the son of Zuar. From Zebulun, Eliab, the son of Helon. From the sons of Joseph, from Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Amihud. And from Manasseh, Gamaliel, the son of Pedazur. Paul actually trained under a man named Gamaliel centuries later. From Benjamin, Abadon, the son of Gideoni. From Dan, Ahiezer, the son of Amishadai. From Asher, Pagiel, the son of Okran. From Gad, Eliasaph, the son of Duel. From Naphtali, Ahira, the son of Enan. These were the ones chosen from the congregation, the chiefs of their ancestral tribes, the heads of the clans of Israel. And I know, as we're going to be going through, there's going to be a lot of names, right? There's going to be lists. It's interesting if you kind of think of there's going to be a lot of different, almost think of it as different genres within this book, right? And that's actually an exciting thing, because there's portions that are narrative, there are portions that are, like, numbering, there are portions that are, like, these, like, kind of genealogical portions, and we are not used to that kind of reading, right? That is, like, for us, it's like, oh, wait, what? And there can be a temptation to just kind of gloss over it. But remember, like, one, this is a book which is giving us so much, I mean, one, so much, so many different kinds of information that actually happened that are of great importance. And even when, if the narrative feels challenging in ways as you're going through it, I would encourage you, this isn't clearly applicable to me, so I'm just not going to listen. But rather, I would challenge you, like, press in, stay aware, and consider even, like, I don't really understand what this means or, like, why this is here, but I'm going to stay with it. And the more and more you stay with it, just like reading any text, right? When you read an unfamiliar text, and especially unfamiliar genres, the more time you spend with it, the more you sit with it. Read other authors who have read it and, like, wrestled with it. Let it soak in, and you're actually going to find your mind will open to understand more and more. Moses and Aaron took these men who had been named, and on the first day of the second month, they assembled the whole congregation together who registered themselves by clans, by fathers' houses, according to the number of names from 20 years old and upward, head by head, as the Lord commanded Moses. So he listed them in the wilderness of Sinai. The people of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, head by head, every male from 20 years old and upward, who were able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Reuben were 46,500. Of the people of Simeon, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, those of them who were listed according to the number of names, head by head, every male from 20 years old and upward, all who were able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Simeon were 59,300. Of the people of Gad, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of the names from 20 years old and upward, all who were able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Gad were 45,650. Of the people of Judah, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Judah were 74,600. I'm going to pause, and even as you're listening, you know, perhaps, I mean, obviously there's like a formula that is here, the way this is being stated again and again, over and over. And I would encourage you, even like, I think in reading the Bible, it can be helpful to think of like, what would this have been like for the original people hearing this? You know, I think we're in a culture where, I mean, maybe there's some of you, this would be an exception. I think for a lot of us, we don't really care about our genealogies. You know, like a lot of us, we don't know really like past our grandparents or maybe a few generations beyond that. We don't really know or frankly care oftentimes. But think, this is a people where their family actually mattered a lot to them. And imagine being in their shoes and hearing this like, oh, this is my people's story. And this is, if you're a Christian, this is your people's story in a sense as well. You know, you've been grafted in to this family. But imagine people hearing this and hearing like, oh man, I'm of the tribe of Judah. Like, this is like part of my story. You know, I mean, even thinking of Jesus, for instance, right, hearing that and like, as a young man and hearing this and this being part of his story. It's a cool thing. So I think even using your imagination to imagine what this would this have been like to hear this, right? Okay. Of the people of Issachar, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Issachar were 54,400. Of the people of Zebulun, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Zebulun were 57,400. Of the people of Joseph, namely of the people of Ephraim, by their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Ephraim were 40,500. Of the people of Manasseh, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Manasseh were 32,200. Of the people of Benjamin, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Benjamin were 35,400. Of the people of Dan, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Dan were 62,700. Of the people of Asher, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Asher were 41,500. Of the people of Naphtali, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Naphtali were 53,400. These are those who were listed, whom Moses and Aaron listed with the help of the chiefs of Israel, 12 men, each representing his father's houses. So all those listed of the people of Israel by their father's houses, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war in Israel, all those listed were 603,550. Imagine, if you will, just like think back to Abraham, when God first met Abraham and called him, right? We're actually told in Genesis 22 that God has said how much he was going to bless Abraham. And I actually want to read this here because I think it's of great relevance here. By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son. This is right after he was about to sacrifice Isaac, and the Lord actually provided a ram instead. I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. So one, think the Lord said he was going to provide abundant blessing to Abraham. And here we are, and the people listed here, this isn't even including the Levites, is 603,000, right? Also, I want you to keep this in mind. In your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. That is a phrase of paramount importance that I think is worth keeping in your mind the whole time as you're reading the Bible, because this climax happens in Jesus, and it's actually, we're the fruit of that promise. We are the fruit of that promise. Now, at the start of Exodus, in Exodus 1:5, it says that all the descendants of Jacob were 70 persons. So an incredible thing to think that this went from 70 people as they were entering Egypt, and now leaving Egypt, it's a vast sum. It's 603,000. And that's just of the men, right, who are able to go to war. So you count on top of that thinking, okay, there are people under 20 and older folks, right? And then you think also women and children. So I've heard various estimates. Estimates I've heard seem to be generally oftentimes people saying 2 to 3 million of the total amount of Israelites. We're not told that. But incredible, you think of this promise God made to Abraham, who was childless, Abraham and Sarai, childless, right? And now this great fruition. So you can trust God's promises.
What? I just looked this up. The population of Portland proper is 630,000.
Yeah, so, yeah, totally. Population of Portland, so you think about that, totally. But the Levites were not listed along with them by their ancestral tribe. For the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, only the tribe of Levi you shall not list, and you shall not take a census of them among the people of Israel. But appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony and over all its furnishings and over all that belongs to it. They are to carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings, and they shall take care of it and shall camp around the tabernacle. When the tabernacle is to set out, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up. And if any outsider comes near, he shall be put to death. Okay, remember again the holiness of God's presence within the tabernacle. The people of Israel shall pitch their tents by their companies, each man in his own camp, and each man by his own standard. But the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle of the testimony, so that there may be no wrath on the congregation of the people of Israel. And the Levites shall keep guard over the tabernacle of the testimony. Thus did the people of Israel. They did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. Whenever you hear that phrase, which will be coming up many times, that they actually did what the Lord commanded Moses, I mean, that's like a beautiful thing. And we're going to see it's, sadly, it's so often contrasted by the people of Israel doing the opposite of what the Lord commanded Moses, what the Lord commanded them. But a beautiful thing whenever we see that. It is a good thing. All right. So with that, we're going to go forward. One other thing that's just of interest here, if you had noticed at the start of the chapter, we're told the specific day, the first day of the second month in the second year, that God told Moses to take the census. And then in verse 18, we're told on the first day of the second month, they assembled them to take the census. So there's a sense in which like Moses, like, and we see this with Abraham too, God tells him to do something and there's not dilly-dallying. He does it. Like he immediately does it. Just as like God tells Abraham to do something and the next day or whenever it is, he gets up, he does it immediately. And there's just a beautiful thing in that. Okay, with that, Numbers 2, the Lord is gonna give instruction on how the Israelites are to camp, in what arrangement, and notice that he's gonna be appointing leaders by their specific names, which is just a beautiful thing, just a reminder like God knows us each by name. God is not like a king who's distant and doesn't have time to like get to know his subjects or something, or speaks in vague generalities like I'll talk to Moses, but I don't care about the rest of you. Like actually God is calling people by name. As Jesus tells us, not a sparrow falls without him knowing us. Every hair on our heads right now is numbered by him, like he cares. And if you're feeling downtrodden, just knowing in the simplicity of that, the Lord sees your situation and he cares. He cares immensely about you. A beautiful thing. Numbers 2, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, the people of Israel shall camp each by his own standard with the banners of their fathers' houses. They shall camp facing the tent of meeting on every side. Those to camp on the east side toward the sunrise shall be of the standard of the camp of Judah by their companies, the chief of the people of Judah being Nashon, the son of Aminadab, his company, as listed, being 74,600. Those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Issachar, the chief of the people of Issachar being Nethaneel, the son of Zuar, his company, as listed, being 54,400. Then the tribe of Zebulun, the chief of the people of Zebulun being Eliab, the son of Helon, his company, as listed, being 57,400. All those listed at the camp of Judah by their companies were 186,400. They shall set out on the march. So, they shall set out first on the march. I'm sorry. So, when they're camped, this is like the arrangement of the camp, and it's we see here that it's divided up. There's like there's going to be these different. It's divvied up into different divisions of people of these different tribes. It's not just like 12 tribes dispersed out, but we're actually given like it's directionally arranged. And then also Judah is going to be the first when they're actually marching, because the idea here is Israel is going to be marching through the desert. And when they stop, they're going to erect the tabernacle. And when the Lord tells them to go again, then they pick it up and they go. And even to me, there's just such a beautiful image. Like think of, and I think I mentioned this last, like in the past as we've talked through this, imagine being in the camp of Israel, and there's a sense like you're lying in bed, and you know that there is the tabernacle is in the midst of you. God's presence is there. And there's like a flame ever burning in there at night. And just to think like there's people around it and God's presence is in that. And think of the immense comfort there is, like that it's not just like, oh, like we think God's somewhere around distantly. He gave us a command like a distant landlord, but God is the God who's actually with his people, imminent with his people right there. And Jesus is one of the names for Jesus. It's Emmanuel, God with us. That is the God who we serve, who actually has pitched his camp then, as it were, the sense of tabernacle. He's done that among us, within us, by his spirit. It's a beautiful, profound thing. And also a nation in which God is at the center. He's in the middle of Israel's cultural life, civic life. You just think of a legal life, all these things. God is right in the middle. In the Garden of Eden, God was walking in the garden in the cool of the day, we're told. And then we were cast out, and the Lord is moving towards us to restore. And here we see in ancient Israel, like God is moving to restore that, his presence in the midst of his people. And now through Christ dwelling in us. John 1, you may have heard this before, but in John 1, verse 14, we're told, and the word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. And that word, that phrase, dwelt among us, in Greek is literally tabernacled with us, tabernacled with us. So this tabernacle, the tent of meeting within us. A great honor and also a confidence if you think of like enemies around you, or like you think of just like, what if we get assaulted from the wilderness? Well, God's presence is right there in the midst of them. Continuing on, verse 10, on the south side shall be the standard of the camp of Reuben by their companies, the chief of the people of Reuben being Elizur, the son of Shedeur. His company is listed being 46,500. And those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Simeon, the chief of the people of Simeon being Shelumiel, the son of Zerushaddai. His company is listed being 59,300. Then the tribe of Gad, the chief of the people of Gad being Eliasaph, the son of Reuel. His company is listed being 45,650. All those listed at the camp of Reuben by their companies were 151,450. They shall set out second. Then the tent of meeting shall set out with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camps. As they camp, so shall they set out, each in position, standard by standard. You think of these kind of these banners. We're not told what they look like, but banners for the different encampments. On the west side shall be the standard of the camp of Ephraim by their companies, the chief of the people of Ephraim being Elishama, the son of Ammihud, his company as listed being 40,500. And next to him shall be the tribe of Manasseh, the chief of the people of Manasseh being Gamaliel, the son of Pedazur, his company as listed being 32,200. Then the tribe of Benjamin, the chief of the people of Benjamin being Abidan, the son of Gideoni, his company is listed being 35,400. All those listed at the camp of Ephraim by their companies were 108,100. They shall set out third on the march. On the north side shall be the standard of the camp of Dan by their companies, the chief of the people of Dan being Ahiezer, the son of Amishaddai. His company is listed being 62,700. And those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Asher, the chief of the people of Asher being Pagiel, the son of Ochran. His company is listed being 41,500. Then the tribe of Naphtali, the chief of the people of Naphtali being Ahira, the son of Enan. His company is listed being 53,400. All those listed in the tribe of Dan were 157,600. They shall set out last, standard by standard. These are the people of Israel as listed by their fathers' houses. All those listed in the camps by their companies were 603,550. But the Levites were not listed among the people of Israel as the Lord commanded Moses. Thus did the people of Israel, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so they camped by their standards, and so they set out, each one in his clan, according to his father's house. All right, so next we're going to be looking at the duties of the Levites. And we'll dive right into it. These are the generations of Aaron and Moses at the time when the Lord spoke with Moses on Mount Sinai. These are the names of the sons of Aaron: Nadab the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the anointed priests, whom he ordained to serve as priests. But Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered unauthorized fire, or some translations might say strange fire, before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests in the lifetime of Aaron, their father. Recall we talked about Nadab and Abihu in Leviticus 10. You can always, that teaching's on the website if you want to check that out. And it's a reminder that sin is serious and holiness is serious. And so with that, we're going to go through the duties of the Levites. I'm probably just going to go straight through for the most part. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Bring the tribe of Levi near and set them before Aaron the priest that they may minister to him. They shall keep guard over him and over the whole congregation before the tent of meeting as they minister at the tabernacle. They shall guard all the furnishings of the tent of meeting and keep guard over the people of Israel as they minister at the tabernacle. And you shall give the Levites to Aaron and his sons. They are wholly given to him from among the people of Israel. And you shall appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall guard their priesthood. But if any outsider comes near, he shall be put to death." Again, the seriousness of holiness and protection for the rest of Israel from somebody just like coming and defiling the tabernacle, because that would be disastrous for Israel, catastrophic. "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Behold, I have taken the Levites from among the people of Israel instead of every firstborn who opens a womb among the people of Israel. The Levites shall be mine, for all the firstborn are mine. On the day when I struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I consecrated for my own all the firstborn of in Israel, both of man and of beast. They shall be mine. I am the Lord.' And the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, 'List the sons of Levi by fathers' houses and by clans. Every male from a month old and upward you shall list.' So Moses listed them according to the word of the Lord, as he was commanded. And these were the sons of Levi by their names: Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And these are the names of the sons of Gershon by their clans: Libni and Shimei. And the sons of Kohath by their clans: Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And the sons of Merari by their clans: Mali and Mushi. These are the clans of the Levites by their fathers' houses. To Gershon belonged the clan of the Libnites and the clan of the Shimeites. These were the clans of the Gershonites. Their listing, according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, was 7,500. The clans of the Gershonites were to camp behind the tabernacle on the west, with Eliasaph, the son of Lyle, as chief of the fathers' houses of the Gershonites. And the guard duty of the sons of Gershon in the tent of meeting involved the tabernacle, the tent with its covering, the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting, the hangings of the court, the screen for the door of the court that is around the tabernacle and the altar, and its cords, all the service connected with these." So you see intimately how God like is breaking down like the details on who is to handle what. It's of prime importance. To Kohath belonged the clan of the Amramites, and the clan of the Izharites, and the clan of the Hebronites, and the clan of the Uzielites. These are the clans of the Kohathites. According to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, there were 8,600 keeping guard over the sanctuary. The clans of the sons of Kohath were to camp on the south side of the tabernacle, with Elizaphan, the son of Uziel, as chief of the father's house of the clans of the Kohathites. And their guard duty involved the ark, the table, the lampstand, the altars, the vessels of the sanctuary with which the priests minister, and the screen, all the service connected with these. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, was to be chief over the chiefs of the Levites, and to have oversight of those who kept guard over the sanctuary. To Merari belonged the clan of the Mahlites and the clan of the Mushites. These are the clans of Merari. Their listing, according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, was 6,200. And the chief of the father's houses of the clans of Merari was Zeruiel, the son of Abihail. They were to camp on the north side of the tabernacle. And the appointed guard duty of the sons of Merari involved the frames of the tabernacle, the bars, the pillars, the bases, and all their accessories, all the service connected with these. Also the pillars around the court with their bases and pegs and cords. Those who were to camp before the tabernacle on the east, before the tent of meeting toward the sunrise, were Moses and Aaron and his sons guarding the sanctuary itself to protect the people of Israel. And any outsider who came near was to be put to death. All those listed among the Levites whom Moses and Aaron listed at the commandment of the Lord by clans, all the males from a month old and upward were 22,000. So that this idea of the firstborn, if you noticed, like right at the start of that passage, the idea is, remember, when God is leading his people out of Egypt, all the firstborn are his, and we're told ways to like redeem the firstborn, if you recall that. And here he's saying that I'm actually taking the Levites in my service instead of the firstborn of each clan, each of the clans, each of the subdivisions of the people of Israel. And we'll keep going with that. And the Lord said to Moses, list all the firstborn males of the people of Israel from a month old and upward, taking the number of their names. And you shall take the Levites from me, I am the Lord, instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites, instead of all the firstborn among the cattle of the people of Israel. So Moses listed all the firstborn among the people of Israel, as the Lord commanded him. And all the firstborn males, according to the number of names, were from a month old and upward, as listed, were 22,273. Now, notice there's a difference. We're told that that's the amount of firstborn of Israel, but a few verses earlier, in verse 39, we're told there's 22,000. So, there's 22,000 of the Levites. So, what about that 273 hanging in the air? What we're going to find out. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of their cattle. The Levites shall be mine. I am the Lord. And as a redemption price for the 273 of the firstborn of the people of Israel, over and above the number of the male Levites, you shall take 5 shekels per head. You shall take them according to the shekel of the sanctuary, the shekel of 20 gerahs. A shekel, about 11 grams, and a gerah is about 0.6 grams. And give the money to Aaron and his sons as a redemption price for those who are over. So Moses took the redemption money from those who are over and above those redeemed by the Levites. From the firstborn of the people of Israel, he took the money, 1,365 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. And Moses gave the redemption money to Aaron and his sons according to the word of the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moses. All right, so we've been told, like, one, it's laid out. We've taken a big census of all the people of Israel. Now we've seen the Levites, and there have been specifically like the duties, what people are over, assigned to them by their grouping. And now we're actually going to be told, like, so when the tabernacle is disassembled to be moved, like, what does that look like? Especially when you consider, like, if you've been thinking about, like, okay, the tabernacle is not a permanent place. Eventually there was to be the temple, which is was supposed to be a permanent place, right? But the tabernacle is movable. And so you think, like, okay, if the objects within the tabernacle is a place of holiness, how do you disassemble that? And like, what does that mean for when you're on the move? And chapter 4 is going to go into that in detail. We'll dive right in. I think something that's cool here, just to remember, is, you know, people can caricature Christianity as this idea that, oh, God kind of only really cares about the spiritual, right? Not the physical. And here we're going to be given like this description, as we've been given throughout the books we've been reading, like a very fine-tuned description, detailed description of physical things that matter to God. Because the Bible doesn't hold to this dualism of just like God cares about your like the spiritual and not the physical. But rather, there's a recognition like these things are linked. We are physical beings. We are spiritual beings. And God cares about the real physical world, as evidenced here. So we're going to dive into this and see what happens with these holy objects, with this tabernacle. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, take a census of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, all who can come on duty to do the work in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the most holy things. When the camp is to set out, Aaron and his sons shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the ark of the testimony with it. Then they shall put on top of it a covering of goat skin. You might see different translations for that, perhaps fine leather. I've heard kind of different variations of translations, all generally within the same kind of like talking about the same general thing, but some slight variations. But a covering of goatskin, and spread on top of that a cloth olive blue, and shall put in its poles. And over the table of the bread of the presence, they shall spread a cloth of blue, and put on it the plates, the dishes for incense, the bowls, and the flagons for the drink offering. The regular showbread also shall be on it. Then they shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet, and cover the same with a covering of goatskin, and shall put in its poles. And they shall take a cloth of blue, and cover the lampstand for the light, with its lamps, its tongs, its trays, and all the vessels for oil with which it is supplied. And they shall put it with all its utensils in a covering of goatskin, and put it on the carrying frame. And over the golden altar they shall spread a cloth of blue, and cover it with a covering of goatskin, and shall put in its poles. And they shall take all the vessels of the service that are used in the sanctuary, and put them in a cloth of blue, and cover them with a covering of goatskin, and shall put them on the carrying frame. And they shall put away the ashes from the altar, and spread a purple cloth over it. And they shall put on it all the utensils of the altar which are used for the service there, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, and the basins, all the utensils of the altar. And they shall spread on it a covering of goatskin, and shall put in its poles. And when Aaron and his sons have finished covering the sanctuary and all the furnishings of the sanctuary, as a camp sets out, after that the sons of Kohath shall come to carry these. But they must not touch the holy things, lest they die. These are the things of the tent of meeting that the sons of Kohath are to carry. So you see the absolute like prime importance of like, man, these things need to be covered and well taken care of. And the sense of like, this holiness must not be defiled. It would be destructive to us. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, shall have charge of the oil for the light, the fragrant incense, the regular grain offering, and the anointing oil, with the oversight of the whole tabernacle and all that is in it, of the sanctuary and its vessels. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Let not the tribe of the clans of the Kohathites be destroyed from among the Levites, but deal thus with them, that they may live and not die when they come near to the most holy things. Aaron and his sons shall go in and appoint them each to his task and to his burden, but they shall not go in to look at on the holy things, even for a moment, lest they die." So even just like looking at them, you know, imperfect analogy, as all analogies are, but I almost think of it as like, you know, when you hear about like, man, the precautions somebody has to take when dealing with like nuclear material, like radioactive materials, you think there's like, you have to put on like I'm blanking on the exact word, but this huge suit, right? Lead-lined suit, you know, you got the face mask. You can only go in for so long. And then afterwards, you know, you see people in like decontamination chambers. It is so serious because you recognize like this radioactivity is deadly. I almost think of this as like an inverted kind of radioactivity, meaning that we are like sin is in our world and we're defiled by sin. And so approaching holiness is like approaching something pure. And it's actually like not saying like, oh, the holiness is radioactive, we can't touch it. It's more like, oh, we have like this radioactive stuff within us. And we recognize that if we like kind of unveil to this holy things, it would be destructive for us. Again, imperfect analogy, but that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. So with that, we shall keep going. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take a census of the sons of Gershon also, by their fathers' houses and by their clans. From 30 years old up to 50 years old, you shall list them, all who can come to do duty, to do service in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the clans of the Gershonites in serving and bearing burdens. They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle and the tent of meeting with its covering, and the covering of goatskin that is on top of it, and the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the hangings of the court, and the screen for the entrance of the gate of the court that is around the tabernacle and the altar, and their cords and all the equipment for their service, and they shall do all that needs to be done with regard to them. All the service of the sons of the Gershonites shall be at the command of Aaron and his sons in all that they are to carry and in all that they have to do, and you shall assign to their charge all that they are to carry. This is the service of the clans of the Gershonites, of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting, and their guard duty is to be under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. As for the sons of Merari, you shall list them by their clans and their fathers' houses. From 30 years old up to 50 years old, you shall list them, everyone who can come on duty to do the service of the tent of meeting. And this is what they are charged to carry as the whole of their service in the tent of meeting, the frames of the tabernacle with its bars, pillars, and bases, and the pillars around the court with their bases, pegs, and cords, with all their equipment and all their accessories. And you shall list by name the objects that they are required to carry. This is the service of the clans of the sons of Merari, the whole of their service in the tent of meeting, under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest." And as you read that, imagine like that the honor it would be for these people, the sons of these different clans, to be the ones actually like carrying the objects, disassembling and carrying these objects which are of prime importance at the center of the Israelite life, right? That this is the holy God who dwells in them, and these different clans, they get to have the honor of actually like carrying these things. And there's also this sense of like, man, this is like very serious business, right? As evidenced by the warnings around it. And you know, there's something to us, one, both a takeaway and just a sense of like, man, holiness matters. And you even think of like, as we're talking about the dire precautions around the holy things, and thinking that what puts, again, it lifts up the reality of what Christ did for us, that we are welcomed in, that Christ, that the curtain for the Holy of Holies was torn, and that we have access to God, free access to God. And also, serving God matters. You know, there is, it's a great honor. And as Christians, you know, we aren't just saved from sin, and you can think of that as a parallel of the Israelites being saved from slavery in Egypt, and made his people, as the Israelites were, right? And called to serve him, which the Israelites were. We're called to serve him. Think of it, it's our purpose. It's what we're actually made for. It's our joy. It's the means of our fulfillment of our humanity. And we're called to bless others. Israel, like I had mentioned earlier, it was to be a light to the nations, a blessing to all nations. And this tabernacle and the temple, it's all part of it. They were called into this beautiful thing. With that, we're going to read out the final section here before wrapping it up. And Moses, we're in verse 34, and Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of the congregation listed the sons of the Kohathites by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting, and those listed by clans were 2,750. This was a list of the clans of the Kohathites, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron listed according to the commandment of the Lord by Moses. Those listed are the sons of Gershon by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting. Those listed by their clans and their fathers' houses were 2,630. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Gershon, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron listed, according to the commandment of the Lord. Those listed are the clans of the sons of Merari by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting. Those listed by clans were 3,200. This was a list of the clans of the sons of Merari, whom Moses and Aaron listed according to the commandment of the Lord by Moses. All those who were listed of the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of Israel listed by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come to do the service of ministry and the service of bearing burdens in the tent of meeting, those listed were 8,580. According to the commandment of the Lord, through Moses they were listed, each one with his task of serving or carrying. Thus they were listed by him as the Lord commanded Moses. So even as you're reading this, perhaps you're thinking like, okay, like this, and we're talking about what we're called to. God's presence, which was dwelling in the tabernacle, that is now, if you are believing in Jesus, his Holy Spirit's within you. That's dwelling within you. And our calling goes back to Matthew 28, right at the end. Jesus, right before he ends his earthly ministry, he gives a commission to all of us. And he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Just on a quick reading, two things I want to point out. One, his presence. I am with you always to the end of the age. The beauty of like God dwelling in the midst of the Israelite camp. I think the beauty of the Lord dwelling in the midst of us, in the very seat of our being. And that he's given us a job to do. You know, I think it is a tragedy to think of people who come to know the Lord, become Christian, and they genuinely know the Lord, but they don't realize, like, we're not just called to, like, kind of sit, like, as bumps on a log, like, just seeking to avoid sin as much as we can until we die or Jesus comes back, right? It's not just that. Obviously, yes, avoid sin. That's good. Wait for expectantly for Jesus to come back. But we're called to invite people in. We are the fruit here. Us sitting here are the fruit of God using Israel and using his son, Jesus Christ, to be a light to the nations, a blessing to the nations. We're the fruit of that. We're the fruit of the gospel going forth, and we're called to be part of that grand invitation, like the biggest invitation a human being could receive. You know, at the start in Genesis, Adam and Eve are given a job to be, to take dominion, to be a blessing to the whole earth, to steward this earth, to be fruitful and multiply. And even though sin, like grievously, like I think of it like an atomic bomb, getting everything warped and off track, the Lord still has redeemed us and has called us into this big vision, being a blessing to the whole world, stewarding what we've been giving, and being fruitful and multiplying as the gospel is like spreading throughout the earth. So all of us, no matter what age, no matter like if we feel like, man, I feel like I blew up most of my life, I don't know what to do now, the Lord has such purpose for you, such purpose for you now to be a blessing to others. And even if it's like, oh, I feel shy, or I have a limited field of influence, or even it's like, man, I have mobility issues. It's hard for me to like get out there. I'm not like, I can't go out on the mission field. The mission field is all around us. We are in, I mean, in Portland, it might feel particularly easy to be like, yeah, no, I know the mission field is all around us. But for no matter where we are, no matter where we are, there's a mission field around us, and the Lord has called us into it. What a great beauty. Like, you think of the honor it was for these people to be serving the living God, and that honor is ours. That honor is ours. So with that, I just want to close in prayer. Man, 7 o'clock on the dot. What a delight. yeah, raise the roof. Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to pray. And Lord, I'm just thankful for everybody here and the beauty of what you have commissioned us to do and invited us in. And Holy Spirit, I just, with open hand, open heart, I just want to pray that you would work in us to bring that about, even now, Lord, just like holding our hands open, Lord. Empower us to be lights to this world, Lord, to be lights to people. And Lord, we can't do it on our own strength. We will burn out. I will burn out. But Lord, by your strength, because you are within us, your Holy Spirit within us. So I pray that we'd know with greater clarity and excitement that gift of intimacy with the holy God of the universe who loves us and fully accepts us right now in the beloved, in Jesus. And Lord, I pray that out of that, we would be like a furnace warming us and spreading that warmth and that joy and that loving invitation and that truth to others, Lord, by your Spirit. And Lord, even just thinking of like, man, assassination attempt yesterday and the kind of polarization and chaos of the world around us, Lord, the pain. I think I was actually reminded of the 60s, thinking about the assassination attempts then and the actual assassinations then, and the sense of like cities on fire, a world on fire, all these kinds of things, and thinking like, man, that was a time when actually a lot of people met Jesus through the Jesus movement in that time, because when people realize the world isn't working, they need to look for a solution outside the world. And Lord, that's an opportunity for us, for you to use us. So Lord, I want to pray for comfort and peace that is found in you for people in our nation, in our world, Lord. Thank you for your grace and even the things that could have gone much worse, like yesterday, which did not. We're thankful for that. But Lord, I just want to pray for our troubled nation, our world, that you would use us in the midst of it. And also lifting up, some of you know Nathan. Nathan was in a motorcycle accident. He's usually here at Fellowship. Sounds like he's okay, but definitely there was an injury. So I don't know the details on that, but I want to lift him up and I want to pray for your comfort and your healing and your peace for him, Lord. I pray that we would be a community defined by your love as we love one another and we invite others in. In the name of Jesus, amen.